one thing we have to keep in mind is that, and we talked about it on the show,
but at the same time, it comes from two different points.
Then all of a sudden, you want to say, oh,
what do you think? I think for me, I don't know if I can speak for everybody else.
This is Dead in Sports.
This is the place where sports opinions collide. Dead in Sports. I'm your host, Kenneth B. Ansh. Joining me on the show, we got Shelton J.
What's good? What's good?
And Manny.
What's good? What's good? Happy April Fools.
Mm-hmm. And Q will be joining us momentarily. He's running a little bit behind, but he'll be here.
Q on CP time.
Hey, we got a super chat early from Aldrin J.
Already? What's good?
Yeah, it's for you. It's for you, Manny. What's your thoughts on the Linda contract?
Oh, right off the bat. I love it, man. I mean, you know, anytime you can sign a 27-year-old superstar to a 10-year deal, I mean, you know, it makes sense. I mean, obviously, is anybody worth 360, or it's going to be total is $363 million by the time it's done. You know, it's including this year plus the extension. Yeah, it's a lot of money, but, you know, I don't know if he's worth it per se. I mean, who's worth $363 million, but... You know, he's well paid and he deserved it. So, yeah, man, I love it. As a Met fan, I love it. And it's not even so much about him. It's just about what that signifies, man. The franchise has been owned by some idiots for 40 years. So now the fact that we got an actual owner that's willing to spend money in New York is refreshing. So I'm happy.
What did Linda bat last year? I didn't even look it up. I meant to look and see what.
He had a down year last year. He didn't do too good last year, but it was 60 games. He didn't really. It was straight. He had a down year for his standards. But when the dude is healthy, if he's healthy, he's never had any injury issues. If he's healthy, he's going to bat anywhere from 280 to 300, 30 home runs, close to 100 RBIs, and he plays at a. I mean, he's a superstar defensively.
And some players, you know, with baseball, man, it takes them a while to even get going.
You know? It's a weird sport like that too. Yeah, you know, it's a weird sport like that. Like you could have a rough April, and it'd be like, oh, okay, he's gonna eventually catch up to his numbers.
That's true. That's the conversation I have with my son. I have it almost every day now because he's playing baseball. He's been playing baseball, but this is the first time they're losing. I mean, this team is not winning like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and he's had some, I mean, he's batted pretty good, but he's had some, you know, a couple games where he struggled. And I'm like, listen, baseball is the only sport where you can be a failure. You know, 3 out of 10 times you hit, that's 30%. Like that's getting a 30 on a test and you're going to be in the Hall of Fame. You're going to make $100 million if you can hit the ball 3 out of 10 times. So just understand that, take deep breaths and relax. And if you go 0-for-5, that game is over. Let's go to the next game.
And even if you don't get a hit or you're struggling, you know what I'm saying? Still have good at bats, still try to work the count, do things like that. You know what I mean? So just even though the ledger looks bad, if you didn't get a hit, you still put a quality at bat out. And then, you know, you still gotta do your thing on the base pads. If you get on the base pads, draw your walk,
correct.
You know, play your defense or whatever. So
correct.
So you believe this signing is a positive sign for the organization?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, like I said, I mean, it's literally getting one of the 10, 15 best players in the sport in his, I mean, literally entering or just about in his prime, you know, and the fact that you did it, he didn't have to go to free agency. You didn't have to go through that drama of like having 29 of the teams having to court him. You know, obviously the Dodgers, they have their own shortstop situation with Seager, and he's going to be a free agent. And who knows, maybe they lose him. They would have went after Lindor. There was a lot of rumors that the Dodgers, if Seager didn't want to resign or for whatever reason lost him, we're going to go after Lindor. So, I mean, anytime you can get a guy of that caliber, man, I mean, this isn't a scrub. This is one of the 10, 15 best players in the sport, and you have him for the next 10 years. If I say, man, and obviously a 10-year contract, a lot of things can happen in 10 years, injuries, whatever. But if you get 7 to 8 quality years, which is not asking for much, like, he's 27. That's age 34. That's not unreasonable that you get 7, 8 good years out of him and you win a championship. I think it's well worth it.
I don't know enough about Linda, but he must be a defensive stalwart because this man ain't hit 300 since 2016. And even then, he hit 301. So to pay him that kind of money, you think that's worth it, Manny?
Yeah, man. Yeah, he's look at his power numbers. Look at his arm. Look at his slugging. I mean, he looks small, but he's a slugger.
Where does he bat in the lineup? Because I don't, like I said,
he's versatile. Like, he could bat leadoff. He could bat second or third. Ideally, you want him, but I personally think he's someone that should bat maybe second or third. Or lead off. I think he's versatile and that he can do all three, because he could also steal bases. He's actually pretty fast too. Mm-hmm. He's a versatile hitter in that sense, that you could put him basically in the top three parts in the lineup. I mean, hell, you could buy him cleanup because he could hit close to 40 home runs. So
I'm gonna pay close attention to him this year, because I noticed that he like I said, the most RBIs he's ever had was 2018 when he had 92. So
yeah, because he's been at the top of the lineup. He's been mostly okay. For the Indians, he was mostly a leadoff and a second. He was a second and a leadoff hitter, so he wasn't in a lot of RBI spots too. And plus the Indians were just brutal offensively too. So right. They didn't have a lot of guys on base in front of him. But no, I mean, he's legit. I will say this: he's great. He's really good to great with his bat. He's phenomenal with his glove. Like, he's a platinum glover. So
that's what's important.
Yeah.
That lineup up the middle, second base and shortstop. If you block your shortstop and second baseman down, I just wonder if they could have got him a little cheaper, I guess is what I'm asking.
It's the market, man. That's the market. I mean, ideally, I mean, of course, if you could get Lindor for below what the market is going to ask for, of course, absolutely, right? I mean, anybody, you'd be an idiot not to, but the market, I mean, I tweeted this the other day. I was like, because Met fans were complaining, why doesn't he take the Mets offer? Why is he holding out? Because the report came out that he wanted 12 for 384. And I was like, yo, if that's the market, that's the market. How do you want to say this man to take less than what the market is calling for? And that's what I tell people, is like, your worth is what someone's willing to pay you. If Shelton Jay is not willing to pay you 360, Ken right. might, Manny might, you know, Alden Jay might, like the 29 other teams are, you know what I'm saying? So it's irrelevant whether you think it's too much. Like, somebody going to pay him.
And you best believe they probably tried to get him at a cheaper price.
Oh, yeah. And it's negotiations. Of course you did. You start out low and then you work yourself to a number that's really – he said it tonight. I watched his press conference. He said he just wanted to make more money than Tatis. And to his credit, that's accurate. Like, he probably feels like, yo, I'm older, but I put in more time. I've been an all-star. I've actually done it for a longer period of time. I should make more than Fernando Tatis. So, I mean, you can't be mad at that.
Yeah, this was funny when he said, I'll be a bad motherfucker at 38.
Yeah. I mean, hey. And I don't worry about him, because he's not like a big lumbering dude, six foot six, 275-pound dude that you're going to have to hope and pray he don't break down. Or, you know, he's a guy that his stature, he keeps himself in relatively good shape. Like, even at 35, 36, like, he could probably move over to second base and still be pretty good. Infielders like that, I don't feel like they lose much with age. I mean, they might lose range and stuff. And plus, eventually you're going to have the DH in National League anyway. So you could probably move him over to DH his last 2 or 3 years if he's, you know, and still be relatively productive. I mean, look at Jeter. Jeter played till he was, what, 38? And he wasn't great defensively his last couple years, but he was still serviceable.
Or he can slide over to third like Cal.
Yeah, you can slide him over to third. You can slide him over to second. I mean, hell, first. I mean, he's athletic enough that he could probably play, you know, all those middle, you know, all those infield positions. So, it's not a bad contract, man. It's not. I mean, honestly, ideally, 10. And honestly, too, like, I thought it would have taken like 12, 13 years. Like, I thought it was going to take more years. That's where I'm more about the years and the money, because the money, I mean, the Mets and any other major league team, I mean, these motherfuckers print money. So
yeah, they got the money.
I don't care about the money. I'm more about the years and the fact that they got them at 10 years. I mean, that's honestly kind of a bargain. You got to think about it. Stanton signed for 13 years. Trout, I believe, was 12 years or 13 years for Trout. Mookie had 12 years. I mean, that's a lot of years. 12 years?
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you got him for 10, well, technically 11, but 10 with the extension, yeah, I thought that was pretty straight. So,
man, Cody Bellinger hit a home run that went for nothing. because Justin Tucker ran back. What the hell is going on?
Oh, man. Look at that fucking baseball on Dead End Sports, man. That's what's up, man.
Go Braves.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, we need to talk more baseball. I watch it. Yeah, I like the sport.
Yeah, depending on how far we go this year, the Braves, we will bring it up a lot more.
Just need some more, brothers, man. We just need some more brothers in the sport, man.
We really do.
I think it's starting to. We're starting to get a couple more brothers in the sport, man. Tim Anderson on the White Sox is really good. That kid from Pittsburgh, the rookie, K. Brian Hayes, that kid looks like he's going to be nice. Like, there's a couple of them coming up.
Look at L.A. Look at L.A. trying to do some damage as a net with a little three-pointer and turnaround.
LaMarcus. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. LaMarcus.
Let's go Brooklyn. I'm secretly hoping that we fall out of these playoffs so we can get a nice little pick to join LaMelo.
I know we were going to wait for Q for that first topic, but I guess we did. I guess you want to talk about Roy Williams since we got the UNC fan in the building.
Yeah. He retired, right? He called it a day.
Calling quits. 33 years.
Yes, he did, man. And shout out and kudos to Roy Williams for a great career. He did some great things at Carolina and then Kansas, then back at Carolina. I appreciated all that he brought to the table. But it was time to move on. That he had vertigo, and you'd see him struggle whenever his team would give up a run, he'd fall a lot. And I felt like Roy was
really?
Roy would go down a lot. It was more frequent. You seen it, Manny?
Yeah, I seen it.
More frequent than not.
I gotta see this.
You look over there, look it up, Ken. All of a sudden, you look on the sideline. It became to the place where it was normal, where it'd be like you see Roy down on his knees.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the first time it happened, I was scared to death. Like, is he having a heart attack? But after a while, it was like, oh, Roy just having one.
I think everybody was scared the first time. How about it was against Duke?
Yeah, it was against Duke, I think, where he went down. But after a while, it was like Roy went down again. So call the play, Steve Robinson, let's go. But, I'm gonna miss him going against Coach K. But it was time for some new blood. I think that with Roy as a Carolina fan, the one knock, I loved his recruiting. He recruited awesome. I just hated the way his players were developed. I never saw improvement from year to year like you do on Duke. Coach K, the greatest thing about Coach K, and I can't stand Duke, by the way, is a player will come in as a freshman and look like he doesn't have a clue. But by his junior year, he's making a difference in the games that matter the most. And at Carolina, they were pretty much going to plateau early. Like by the time they hit sophomore, if they were there that long, by the time they were their sophomore year hit, that was the best you were going to get. You didn't see an improvement year to year like you should have seen on some of these players. Brooks this year, I can't think of his name. He should have been a monster. And he was the same thing he was as a freshman. He'd get a few rebounds, make a few plays, but not really a difference maker in any games. And that's what my knock on Roy was. Like I said, he always recruited great. Yeah, always had the players. It's just a matter of getting those guys to grow. And that's where we struggle.
That's interesting. I kind of feel like the opposite, man. I feel like as a Duke, from the Duke perspective, like that used to be our thing, I think, before the one and since we went all in with the one and done's. So the last like 5 to 10 years, I feel like that hasn't been the case with Duke. Like I feel like that's kind of been our problem, is that we've been too much in the one and done, and then we haven't really developed those players that stay for 5 years. It seems like I feel like UNC has actually done the opposite, where I feel like UNC will still have their like big time recruits, a couple of them, but they won't go all in on the one and done's or whatever. And I feel like they still develop a lot of dudes, man. I mean, the year that they won the national championship, you know, they developed a lot of those kids. Like a lot of those kids came in, they weren't, freshmen and big time, players. They developed those dudes, a lot of them.
Well, a lot of those guys were they own their skills in summer league more so than developing through coaching. Like I said, a lot of those Carolina guys didn't get it. They just didn't get it. Like I said, you look at that team this year, Stanley. I can't. Once again, I'm bad with names, so forgive me. And I should know these players, but because I know my Carolina team. But a lot of those, like the point guard, Seven Woods was there. Seven Woods came in as an all world player in high school, but he was the same freshman, sophomore, junior year. He was the same player. He transferred out a senior year to South Carolina, but he was the same player every year. Nate Britt was. I hated Nate Britt more than any other player because he never developed, always turned the ball over, did the same. It was a lot of that. And going forward, I think that it's going to be interesting to see who gets that job. I think Wes Miller from UNC Greensboro is the leading choice because they like to keep hiring in-house. But we're going to have to see what they do going forward. I wouldn't be surprised if it's outside, but if it's internal, it's going to be Wes Miller from UNC Greensboro.
I like Roy, man. I liked him a lot. And, you know, I like that he was emotional, that he wasn't afraid to show that. You know, he always somehow found a way to win when it didn't look like he should be winning with some of those Carolina teams he's had. He was just an all-around, you know, really good guy, man. And you know, it's time. I think we're getting to that point now where, you know, it's time for these OGs to sit down, because you can't have vertical and be falling all the time trying to coach 19, 18 year old kids. That's just not going to fly. These kids ain't trying to see all that bad. I'm just saying. So that's just a bad look. So, you know, at some point they're going to get frustrated and tired of it and, you know, all kind of stuff. But, you know, he's definitely, you know, would you say he's top five coach, college coach all time?
I would think so, just because of his recruiting and the players that he coached. He had some great players come through there. And even at the Kansas level, he was doing the same thing in Kansas. Tickle, yeah, he had Paul Pierce, Jock Vaughn, like you said, all those. This guy had some players.
Yeah,
I'm saying some players. And he's always been a master recruiter. He's always done great things on the recruiting trail, and you can't knock that. You can't. And he's won 900 games. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Yeah,
and he's went toe to toe with Coach K.
Yeah,
and you can't ask for no more than that.
Yeah, man, he's a hell of a coach. Hell of a coach.
Do you think him coming to, like, that North Carolina run is really what helped solidify him? Because he was at Kansas first, right?
Yeah. He didn't win a national championship at Kansas. Got close.
Yeah.
You know, got to two championship games and lost. So he had opportunities to win a national championship. It just never – college is so hard, man. I mean, I was just having a conversation with my boy the other day. I was like, man, college – like. You can't, the same rules in, well, I feel football is different. I feel like college football is different, but because you just have, I mean, look at Alabama, man. I mean, when you basically have five-star All-Americans on your bench, third string, it's a little different. But in college basketball, man, I mean, you can have a great team and you have a 10-minute stretch in the second half where you don't play well. That's it. You're done. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like the NBA where the most talent, you're still going to win over a course of a series. You know, college basketball, man, the randomness of it, the march, you know, the one and done aspect of it. And not only the players, I mean, the tournament, you know, like, look at Gonzaga. Gonzaga messes around on Saturday night and has a bad 10-minute stretch against UCLA, which I don't think is going to happen. But, you know, that's it. Undefeated season over and they don't win a national championship. Like, that's right. How it goes. You know what I mean? So. Roy got close a couple times in Kansas, you know, so there's no fault of his arm. He lost – I forget the first time who he lost to. And then I know he Carmelo, lost to Carmelo. Carmelo he lost to Carmelo in 03. Yep. Yeah. And that's – I mean, you were just going up against Melo at the peak of his – or,
love,
you know,
Melo one,
being a phenomenal college player his 1 year
man.
At Syracuse. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, you can't knock him. But, yeah, North Carolina really solidified him. When he went to North Carolina, made that move, he won three national championships. That really put him and cemented him. I mean, I think he still would have made the Hall of Fame at Kansas because he eventually would have won a national championship at Kansas. Like, I don't doubt that. The great coach eventually is going to win in college basketball if you get enough tries and get enough attempts. So he probably eventually would have won a national championship there. So, but Shelton did bring up something interesting. I am interested to see who they replace him with. A lot of talk about Wes Miller, the guy from UNC. Is it Greensboro or
Greensboro?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, him. Jerry Stackhouse is another name that's been mentioned, although he hasn't really been distinguished from himself as Vanderbilt, but it's Vanderbilt, so yeah. You can't really judge him on that. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, it's one of the 5-6 best jobs in college, so. Literally anybody could be a candidate for that job. I mean, that's the type of job, you know, that's the type of job they call, you pick up the phone. I don't care where you at.
Yeah. I would say it's a top three job. Duke, Carolina, where else?
Kansas, Kentucky,
yeah.
UCLA.
Duke, Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky, UCLA.
Mm-hmm. This sparked when listening to Manny talk, who's next? Who are the new Coach K's, Roy Williams, et cetera, of the world?
Bennett in Virginia.
Mark Few.
Mark Few, yeah, definitely. Well, although he's what, 60? He's in his late 60s, too.
So he's 57.
Is he really?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, I've been thinking Mark Few old as hell. Damn.
Yeah, Mark Few's like 57.
Mark Few, Tony Bennett. Bill Self, I see Bill Self as more of a Coach K, Roy Williams contemporary than I do that next generation. But yeah, Bennett, Few, Scott Drew from Baylor.
Yeah.
Somebody said Jay Wright.
Jay Wright. Although Jay Wright's kind of like Bill Self. Well, he's kind of a contemporary of Coach K and these dudes, but yeah, Jay Wright for sure.
They're talking about Jay Wright being a candidate to replace Roy as well, so.
I mean, that would be sick. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's leaving Villanova.
For Carolina, they said Mark Few was a candidate, but, you know, he would leave Villanova for Carolina, I believe.
You think so? I don't think so.
I think those blue bloods, to be down there in Carolina in that area, ACC, you can't top that.
Yeah, even though Villanova, but he's a king of Villanova, man, and he's won two national championships there. He's, you know, he kept that program going. Obviously you can never, they wave enough money at him, they throw a bag at him, of course he's gonna go anywhere, right? But I don't see it. But who knows, stranger things have happened. I mean, that kid, on the topic of coaches, Porter Moser, the coach from Loyola, I think he's the next big big-time coach in college basketball. I love the way he coaches. I would have said Archie Miller had he stayed at Dayton. Yeah, I know the Indiana thing didn't necessarily go his way. Archie Miller, I still think Archie Miller's going to be straight. Greg Marshall from Wichita State.
Well, that's who my brother wanted, was Greg Marshall. But Greg Marshall's image is tarnished.
Yeah, he's gonna have to take an assistant coaching job.
Wait, what happened to him?
He roughing up players. Greg Marshall is from, he was coaching at Winthrop, which is in Rock Hill, my hometown. So I'm a huge Greg Marshall fan because he put Winthrop on the map, and he left there to go to Wichita State, which was another stepping stone job, which would have catapulted him to a major Division I college because he brought that program from the ground. But those guys killed him, man. They player degrading and what it was a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, he's basically a Bobby Knight, and in an era where you can't be a Bobby Knight anymore. So, but I think he'll rebound. He'll take an assistant coaching job somewhere. Probably do D2 coaching for a while, and then he'll be, because he's a great coach. He's a hell of a coach. So I wouldn't be surprised if he bounces back. I would throw him in that list too, Greg Marshall.
Tigolo made a great suggestion that I know Ken would love. He said Brad Stevens.
I was just about to bring up Brad Stevens. If Brad Stevens is a wild card, if things with the Celtics go left, I could see, because Brad Stevens for a long time has been the guy that a lot of people in Duke circles, him and Quinn Snyder have circled as like possible Coach K successors. So if Carolina can snatch up Brad Stevens,
that'd be a good look. What do you think about that, Ken?
I think that's a great idea. And not just because he's done a great job in the NBA. I just got annoyed when they kept comparing him to Coach Pop. You know, I'm a big Pop fan. So that was insulting to me. But just looking at it, just analyzing that move for him to go to UNC to take over that program, because we are, and like, the man can coach his ass off. Yeah. So him to be able to recruit players to that program with his coaching, he could be the guy.
So what's the problem like with Boston? Oh, go ahead, man.
No, I was just to piggyback off of that. Yeah, Brad Stevens is a hell of a coach, and yeah, it gets annoying when they try to anoint people the next this. I think they just did that because his X's and O's are just so. He's known for his X's and O's and as a tactician and whatnot. I know insert jokes hasn't always necessarily worked out in Boston, but or at least to this rate as far as a championship. But he's a hell of a coach, man. And he's actually fitting in the NBA much better than I thought he would. Like, I didn't think he was going to work in the NBA. So the fact that he's had that much success is a credit to him. As far as what's the problem in Boston, I mean, again, you know, I feel like a lot of times we look at things black and white and we don't want to have nuanced discussions like, yo, the guy got to a game seven and lost to LeBron. Who knows? You know, maybe if those kids shoot better in game seven, who knows? Maybe they get to a final and we look at Brad Stevens totally different, right? A lot of what ifs for Brad Stevens, you know what I mean? But I don't think he's been a disappointment. I just think the biggest disappointment with him has just been he hasn't won the championship. He hasn't solidified this great run that he's had, because up to this year he's had a great record in Boston. You know,
he didn't validate the hype that a lot of, like, Bill Simmons and a lot of people were giving him once LeBron departed. Like, that was
right
a shot, and you know, things change, situations change, circumstances change from season to season, so it there is. Are a lot of variables that you can't account for, but nevertheless, like, he didn't come through, and then you got these ascending superstars or stars. And, you know, you expect, like, this is supposed to be the year. So, yeah.
Everybody brings up, you know, the Kyrie years and stuff like that. But I feel like last year was the year for him. Like, in the East, Miami. I mean, really? You lost to Miami? I mean, that was the one. There's a couple series as a coach, as a player, that you let get away. I guarantee you, you give Brad Stevens truth serum, that series last year against the Heat, you're gonna be like, how the hell did we lose to the Heat? And not knocking the Heat.
Is the national championship set?
No, Final Four.
Oh, okay. Weekend.
Yeah. So
should he be fired now, or should he be fired at the end of the season?
I don't think he should be fired.
No, he's not gonna be fired now, and I don't think he should be fired. I mean, I don't think he should be fired. I don't even think he should be on the hot seat. I feel like he should start facing some more criticism though. Like, because he's lived a charmed life up until this season. So I think he should start facing some more criticism in Boston. Like, yo, like, what's good with you? Like, you have this talent. You have the players. It's time for you now to take it to that next step where you are actually now delivering championships. Development, enough with X's and O's. Right. You got to start winning championships now.
As poorly as they're playing this season, I'm surprised that either of you are saying that. Because like you said, after last year, losing to the Heat, It left a sour taste, and the fact in the way they are responding this season, it's just ridiculous to me. I think it's time to let him go. The only other option is blowing it up at this point. You're not going to do that. I wouldn't do that. I would let him go.
The only it's issue, our first bad year.
Year, yeah. And the only issue with that too is, like, I love when we always say, "Oh, fire coach." I'm not saying you. I'm just saying in general. Like, we always say, "Oh, fire this coach. Fire this coach." Mm-hmm. Who's coming in? who is the guy that you're bringing in that's going to, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't, you know, it's not like you're getting rid of, getting rid of Brad Stevens and Phil Jackson's coming through that door, you know, or Nick Nurse is coming through that door, or Greg Popovich is coming through that door, whoever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes, like, that also plays into it. Like, look at Indiana. They fired Nate, and they hired this stiff. And now Indiana is a complete disaster. Like, what the hell were they thinking?
That's you know what
I
mean?
Like, sometimes the grass isn't always greener on the other side. So like, I get annoyed sometimes when we say, like, oh, fire this guy. Like, who's coming in? Now, if you're telling me you could fire Brad Stevens and, you know, the next hot big name coach is going to come in and resurrect things and fix things, then yeah, sure. Obviously, we don't have the luxury of looking forward like that, right? But that's the other thing about it too, is like, who is an improvement over Brad Stevens? We're all saying that he's a great coach.
I'm going to have your answer on Tuesday because he's not the answer.
He may not be. I'm not completely ruling it out. Like, he may not be. He may be one of those guys that it just doesn't work out in that city for whatever the reason. I'm just saying, like, to just say the guy's he's been a hell of a coach. Criticisms aside, praise aside.
Yeah, I mean, how many answers are there? And, you know, when you really look at coaches that win titles, how many real answers are there? It's always like a revolving door to get guys that are just good and then guys that are win. You have Pop. You have Phil Jackson, who just stumbled into top 10 greatest players of all time on his roster. Spo is one that developed, but he had LeBron. You know, Vogel was good in Indiana, but he needed LeBron to win. Steve Kerr lucked into,
superstars, man.
The Warriors. Based on Mark Jackson's job. So, like, record. Like, how many answers are there out there?
There's not.
I guess for me, this team is it should be a top three team in the East, regardless, every year. So for them to be as down as far as they are, to me, that lets me know leadership is not getting it done in the locker room. That's just what it looks like to me on the court.
In his first bad year since his rookie year.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you saying that, King, because I thought you screamed for him to be fired this whole time. That's what I thought.
He doesn't like the praise of comparing him to Pavlov. That's all
I didn't say he should be fired. My stance is always that Brad Stevens wasn't as good as people made him out to be, but I can't deny, I'm also a numbers guy. Like I've there are times I had to walk it back because I'm like, dang, okay, yeah, maybe I was wrong on this. But it was the hype. It was always the hype. Like, they were saying this guy was as good. They were comparing him to Greg Popovich and a lot of greats in like his first, second, or third year.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to see more.
I need to see them. See, here's the thing. For me, this may be the first year that they're down, but they ain't been winning. And that window's going to close. You got a short amount of time to get in there before that window shuts on you.
I'm not going to wait on
you to get it together. If I'm not seeing a response from my team at any point, then I'm going to come look at the manager. And that's your job. That's your job to make these guys get out there and play right now. And it's not happening. It's just not happening for me. The stars aren't playing like stars. They're not playing good basketball. Did you see them last?
They're not playing.
It's been some bad roster moves, too. Now, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I wanted them to sign Boogie. I thought that would help bolster the front line because the front line has been playing like garbage anyway, even before the Tice trade. But
is it possible, if the roster is down and just not as good and average, is it possible Danny Ainge just giving him some Walmart ingredients?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm.
Two things can be correct. Brad Stevens needs to do a better job, and Danny Ainge has not done as good of a job as surrounding him with talent. Look, I like it. People criticize me because I give Danny, my Boston Celtics fans, friends that I know, think I give Danny Ainge too much credit or I give him too much of a pass. I think Danny Ainge is a hell of a GM. I'm not going to sit here and come on here and say Danny Ainge is. I think he's a very good DM. I mean, he won a championship. Like, you can't just act like he's just a bum. Like, he's a good GM. And the fact that he was able to fleece the Nets in one of the all-time greatest robberies in NBA history, fleece the Nets, a trade that they're just now getting recovery from. Like, you have to give him credit for those things. I know he's a good GM. But look, like every GM, you're going to have your great moments and you're going to have your stumbles. And I feel like the thing with Danny Ainge is that he's hoarded picks for forever instead of he hasn't pulled the trigger on that money move. The move that takes you from being a very good team to being an all-time great team or a very good team or a championship level team. That's where he's fallen short of. Like, why didn't he not go after AD? Like, why didn't he try to secure AD? That's on Danny Ainge. That's not on Brad Stevens.
Yes, it is.
You know what I'm saying?
And that's true. I mean, that's true. I do think Danny has to go first. But still, I don't get passes to Brad or any other coach for that matter. Once again, I look at more than anything else is how players respond. If I don't see any fight, then it's time for a change. This is how I look at it. If I don't see you fighting out there, if I feel like, which, you know, I'm looking for my chair at home. I'm not at the game, so I'm not speaking from that angle. But what I see, the product that I've been seeing on the court this season and the games that I watched, I don't see the fight there. I don't see them with a lot of oomph to them. There's not a lot of moxie. That the big shots and, you know, big defensive and stops that I'm used
Ken
to.
Ken brought up something interesting that I wanted to circle back to. Like, I feel like this is the issue that we have in modern era NBA, right? We equate guys that are talented and guys that score a lot of points to being great transcendent players. Like, there's a difference between being an all-star and being a superstar and being a superstar and being an immortal. LeBron's an immortal. Jordan was an immortal. Bird, mortal. You know, so on and so, like, we know who the immortals are, right? And sometimes, like, we conflate guys that have talent and have skills and put up good numbers as immortals, and they're not that. Like, Jason Tatum, to me, is not an immortal. He's a great player. He's a very good player that at times can be great and at times can push up to being a superstar. He has superstar talent, but he doesn't always play that way. Like, I feel like Jason Tatum is better suited to be a Robin to another great player. I feel like Jaylen Brown is a very good player that has superstar talent, at times can be great, but he's better suited to be a number two on a really good team. Like, if Jaylen Brown was somebody's Robin, I feel like you would see the best out of Jaylen Brown because you don't expect him to actually have to be that guy that carries your burden and be your second, your third best player, or at times be your first best player. Like, that's the issue, I think, with Boston. And I feel like sometimes we don't want to say that. Like, we love the talent that Jason Tatum has, but, and there's nothing wrong with saying that Jason Tatum is good and he's great, but he's not a transcendent player. He's not a guy that you just say, okay, you put Jason Tatum on Charlotte, they're winning a championship. You put Jason Tatum on the Knicks, they're winning a championship. He's not that guy. There's only two or three guys every generation that are those guys. He's not that guy. And that's okay. It's the same thing with Paul George, right? Like, Paul George, and I jokingly say that, right? You know, looks like Tarzan and plays like Jane. But the analogy applies to, like, he's a superstar. If you watch Paul George and you see Paul George ball out, man, you look at, like, damn, Paul George is, he could play defensively. He's a scoring machine. He could do, but why can't you count on him? Because he's not that guy. He's just not that guy that you build around, that you say, this is the guy that is going to win us 5-6 championships. He's not that guy.
So you don't think you build around Tatum?
I don't think you build around Tatum. I think you're starting to come to that realization that I don't think you build. Now, I'm not saying that you should just go trade Jason Tatum now. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that Jason Tatum on a championship team is not the guy that's going to win you a championship. Which is the same thing as saying you don't build around Jason Tatum. He could be a piece to the puzzle. I just don't think you can build. I don't think he is the lead guy on a championship team. That's just me. I could be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I will come on here and walk it back and take my lumps. But I just don't think Jason Tatum's that guy. And I certainly don't think Jaylen Brown's that guy.
I think Tatum is capable. I would think so.
Talent-wise, right. Yes. But we haven't always seen it.
Right. And couldn't that be coaching to blame for that as well?
To an extent, yes.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, sometimes it's the voice in the room. Sometimes that makes all the difference in the world. And it may not be a coach that we know of right now. It may not be somebody we've been thinking of. But that's why I'm a find one in my brain who I would think. Somebody who they would listen to. We talk about the Tyronn Lues of the world. We talk about some coaches like that. Sometimes it takes somebody different, just a different voice in the room to make players wake up and click. Because once again, we talk about this team. This team is only 1.5 games out of fourth place in the East. So that's why exactly. I say what I say. They're not. It's well, not like. that's why I say this team is good enough to be in the top three in the East, because they got the talent to do that. It's just a matter of performing in the games. And I think that part of those games that they have not won is coaching.
Well, at the same time, though, like, part of Jason Tatum's ascension was built on that trade, because that was the moment where people looked at both of the players, Fultz and Tatum. And when Tatum started looking better than Fultz, and Fultz struggled, Ainge got some props, and then it made it look like Tatum was a steal. And
he was.
And yeah. Like, you can see the talent. It just took Fultz a minute. Now he's hurt, but it took him a minute to kind of catch up, right? But I could also say that if you're saying coaching is what's hindering him from becoming that guy, we can also look at coaching helping him become the guy he is today now.
Exactly.
It could go both ways.
You can't have it. Yeah, you can't. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you can make these arguments to fit whatever narrative. Like, if you're anti-Brad Stevens, right, you can say, oh, like Shelton's saying, oh, they should be better, and Brad Stevens may be the reason why Jason Tatum hasn't ascended. And if you're pro-Brad Stevens, then you can do it the other way, like you just brought it up. So it's funny how these arguments can be flipped to fit whatever narrative you want to flip. And Shelton, I'm not saying you're totally wrong. Like, should Brad Stevens be doing – I think Brad Stevens is doing a bad job with this team right now. Per the talent that's on this team, they should not be struggling. Now, a lot of things apply to that. They've had a lot of injuries, especially injuries to important pieces. Marcus Smart is an important, valuable piece on that team that cannot be understated. I know people bring up, oh, it's just Marcus Smart. But, like, yeah, he may not be a superstar, but he's the heart and soul of that team. He brings an edge and a toughness to that team that you just don't replace, and intangibles to that team that you don't replace. And Marcus Smart is a very good player, too, by the way.
So I became a fan of Marcus Smart when he put up 50 in college. And I don't know why I thought that was coming to the NBA, even though he never even got close to that again.
I thought so too, bro. I thought Marcus Smart was going to be nice in the NBA.
Okay, so it wasn't just me.
No, it wasn't just you. I love Marcus Smart in college, and I thought that was going to transition in the NBA. He hasn't been that player, but he's been very good in the NBA.
Yeah,
he's been a very good player in the NBA.
His toughness translated, because he was tough in college, and I remember he got into it with a fan. That's the same guy. It's that same fiery guy. So,
and his defense translated also. His defense is all his defensive abilities, on the ball skills have all translated. His shot, he never really developed his shot, and that was he developed his shot now. He's become a better shooter now.
Yeah.
That was kind of his knocks in college, that he wasn't a great shooter. But
right.
So it's just, you know, he's a really good player, man. I think that sometimes we forget that, right? Like, he's a really good player, and he's also all of these intangibles that we talk about. The other thing you gotta say is, like, Kemba really hasn't been the Kemba that they needed and wanted. Like, that's also fair too. Like, you can't ignore that. Like, they gave this man 50, 67, I don't even know what the number was.
That's huge.
Right? They gave this man a max contract, and he has not been a max player. Like, he just hasn't. That you have to bring that up. That's also a part of the conversation.
What do you guys think about, let's jump to the NFL. What do you guys think about this, the 17 games? I saw some players didn't like it.
No, I hate it. I think it's dumb. I think it's stupid. You know, to me, this is the same league that obviously always professes, right? You know, we're about player safety. You know, we have more information at our disposal, concussions and this, that, and, you know, we take our players' health and safety seriously, you know, and then you got a hard on to add an extra game. And remember, they wanted to add 18 games. They were trying for the longest time to add 18 games, and they compromised at 17. Like, it just makes no sense. It's to me, the NFL had a perfect thing. 16 games, 17 weeks, six playoff teams. They went ahead and added the 17, which doesn't make any sense, but whatever. I feel like the NFL is getting caught in this trap where it's like they're so successful and they make so much money that they feel like they could just do anything and it's still going to work. And maybe so. I just think adding the 17th game, 17 games just feel weird. It's an odd number. You know, it just doesn't feel right. And then, but my biggest problem with this is how soft and just useless the Players Association is, because this is the same players association that constantly complains, constantly cries wolf, cries how they're so underappreciated and oh my God. And then they constantly get punked. Constantly. Like, what is D. Maurice Smith doing? Like, what is his job? Like, what does he do? Get his ass handed to him consistently in every CBA. Folds on every nigga. Like, why didn't the players fight this more? Because, and I blame the players, because the owners wave a bag of money in front of them and say, hey guys, look at all the money that you can make with revenue and TV and all this stuff by adding an extra game. And the players like, all right, okay, I guess. Like, and they fall for it every single time. It's incredible. Like, it's stupid. I'm sorry. I hate it.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense to me. I'm a purist because I like numbers. I like y'all know that about me. I'm a numbers guy. So 16 game was perfect for me. You know what I'm saying? It makes it easier for a 2,000 yard rusher. It makes it easier to break these records that Emmitt Smith, who I want his record gone, but y'all just making it easier for the next person to do so. I want it to be game stat against stat, game against game. 16, like you said, man, it was perfect. I appreciate a 16-game season. I don't see where adding this game helps the game. It just helps the pockets. And yeah. I'm not in agreement with that. We talk about player safety. We talk about injuries and all the things that could happen. Adding one more game puts more wear and tear on my favorite player. So I'd rather leave it like it is. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You got a perfect product. Exactly. Just keep rolling it out there and keep doing what you've been doing, and it's going to work out. It just feels like a money grab to me. And I don't like it. As much as I want more football and more sports, I don't need more games.
Yeah. I don't get it, man. How you feel about it, Ken?
I don't care one way or the other. You know, I think it's all right, so you have the players that come out in opposition to it. What are they going to do? They're obviously going to play. They're going to get paid. They're going to take the check, et cetera, et cetera. But the lack of power that they have, is clearly evident that they can say these things and nothing ever changes. And, you know, that's the thing that's somewhat concerning, because at some point they're going to get that 18th game. And, you know, like, it just feels like a really odd number to play 17. What changes? How do you start calculating, like, records if a person gets an extra game to break somebody's record that Brady or Manning held in a season or Breeze held? Like, it starts to mess with the numbers. We had that discussion before. But at the end of the day, man, we know these things, you know, these things are money grabs, and at some point things are going to change. So it'll be interesting to see what impact this have on other leagues, because they went up to 17, and the NBA wants to go down, and the MLB wants to decrease their games as well, but yet the NFL is adding games. So I think this was a compromise struck to do 17 for now, to eventually go to 18. But you best believe they're going to get that 18th game. What I would recommend to the players is that they should take a week off. If I'm them, if I really don't want to play, I would take a week. I would take a week off and not play. I would not play that last year. I would not play, I mean, the last week or the first week or some, or week going into bye week or something. I don't know. But something to kind of protest. Now, it may cost you a check unless you find a way to fake an injury. But, you know, but do they still have the preseason games, though?
What they ended up doing was cutting off one preseason game and adding in a new regular season game. So
they're playing the same number of games.
Yeah, same number of games. It's just,
so what's, you know, the issue then?
Because that, you know, most players, the way they would work the preseason games is your starter would play a quarter, I think, in the first preseason game. The second preseason game, they may play a half. The third one, they may play another half. And then the fourth one, they pretty much sitting out the whole game. So you really didn't – the first 3 weeks were when you got ready, and you play a quarter, half, maybe three quarters at the most, and then nothing, and then you go into the season. Well, you got three games to do this now, three games to get yourself together. You don't get that week off heading into the season. That was like an extra off week, that last preseason game. So you really don't have that. You're going straight into playing. So
I thought people didn't like preseason games.
They don't.
No.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, like, I don't like preseason. I mean, I don't know who does, but like, I also understand that like preseason wasn't for me as a fan. It was more for coaching, developing roster, configurations, developing players. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what preseason is. So that's why I look at it as such.
Like, I like preseason. Let me tell you why I like it, Manny. I like preseason because I watch a lot of football. So the fringe players, the players that, you know, is trying to make a roster. Josh Hobbs, when he played at Tennessee, I like watching him play. Damian Craig, go back to Damian Craig from Auburn. You know, he was a fringe player that may or may not make the roster. I watched him play himself on the Carolina's roster. Some of those guys that, you know, I followed in college that I was fans of, I was able to see them fight to get on the pro roster. So in saying that, I like preseason for that reason. Plus, I like Hard Knocks. You know, so that's probably one of my favorite points of the year in football is preseason football. For that reason, I can see those guys who, you know, this is some of them guys' last shot. So you really get to watch them do their thing, and it's really fun to watch.
I like that aspect of it too. You know what I mean by it, like, is it appointment television for me? No. Like, I'm not sitting I'm not blowing off date night with wifey on a Saturday night because I got to watch the Jets third stringers trying to make a roster. Like, I'm not doing that, right? You know what I'm saying? So that's what I mean by that. Like, I'm not, is it investment in, on that level? No, but I always got why preseason existed. Could you get away with three? Could you get away with maybe two preseason games? I think so. That was more of it. Do we need four? Probably not, but I got it. I understood it.
And to answer you too, Manny, you can watch Jets third stringers all year long because that's all that they have on that squad anyway.
Hey, man.
You don't have to do that in the preseason. You can watch it during the regular season.
See, we talked about North Carolina, and I was nice. I was polite. I ain't say nothing about North Carolina.
It was interesting. I just read the statement that the NFLPA put out, and they were saying more games means more money for the players.
They
and the
always
thing
show
about
up,
that bullshit. Statement that got me was that, yeah, but the contracts are not guaranteed.
Exactly.
So, it doesn't mean more money for the players.
No, it doesn't.
Spin.
Yeah, that's all it is. They're saying so we can keep paying you, you got to do what we say. That's basically what they're saying. We got a super chat from Marty McFly, too. Appreciate you as always. Players can't complain. 500 plus didn't vote, and it came down to 60 or so votes. That is absolutely correct.
That's
so
fair.
They really can't say anything because they should have been outvoted.
But but that also speaks to the system, right? Like that also speaks to the system. Like you guys know, I'm big on politics, right? Like in 2016, you literally had 70 million people that didn't vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
That legit had like, and every year you really have like 90. Some odd people that just don't vote. And we always say like, oh, we just always accept that. Like, oh, okay. It's just people just don't vote. Like, but that in itself is a problem with the system where people just don't even feel invested to cast a vote. That's a problem too. Like we never actually address why that is. We just always just ignore it as, okay, it is what it is. And it's the same thing here. Like when you have what, 700 players or whatever and like only 60 something vote, that's a problem.
Correct.
Like, that should be addressed. Like, and maybe 500 of those players feel like, hey, what's the point? My voice ain't gonna be heard anyway. That is a problem.
Correct.
Like, it feels like the Players Association, A, doesn't have enough power, and B, even with the little power that they have, they don't leverage it well. So that's an issue onto itself there. So, but I agree with you. That's just incredible that only 60 some odd people just voted, and they voted for 700 players.
Right, damn. And that's just crazy. But they're right. They Alden J also said, you know, Russell Wilson used the preseason to become the starter his rookie year in that year as well.
Absolutely. So Victor Cruz.
Victor Cruz. Oh, I remember him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's why I love preseason, because you find those diamond in the roughs in that time, and certain guys who you get one chance to flash, and you find those type guys in the preseason, and I just love it. I get excited. It gets me going. So I do record a lot of the preseason games and go back and watch as many as I can, just like I do with summer league and basketball. I love the same. I love watching guys get an opportunity and make the most of that opportunity. Not everybody is that top line player from Carolina that gets the shot. You know, some of those guys from smaller schools and smaller places, I like to see them thrive.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, man. What I think you're going to see too is I don't think coaches even like it. It's like 17 games. It's 17 games, man. I think what you're going to start seeing is a combination of load management. You know what I'm saying? in football. Mm-hmm. Obviously not to the degree you see in the NBA. But I think if you're a coach, I think you got to start considering, like, yo, if I got the division wrapped up, you know, December 10th, you know what I'm saying? I might have my players skip that 17th game. Or, you know what I'm saying? I might have my players, you know, not go full throttle, you know, the last two weeks of the season to avoid injury. You know what I'm saying? So I think you will see some sort of I load managers now so coded, but you probably will see load management at some point.
We got a super chat real quick from Black Uru Strikes, who I agree with 100%. The owners have effectively used the economic uncertainty from COVID-19 to scare the players into compliance for the 17 games. That's what this is all about, and that's how I feel about it, too. This is more or less about 100%. The fact that we don't know what's going to happen as far as, fans coming back. We need that extra game to generate that extra revenue. That's what I believe happened, 110%. They wanted it anyway. Whether COVID came or not.
Yeah,
but they wanted the money anyway. But now it's like, okay, great. We're going to sneak this in there. And even when it goes back to normal, we make an extra money. So it just makes all the sense in the world to do if you're a business owner. And it is what it is.
Who left that super chat?
Black
Uru Strikes. Yeah, shout out to him, man. Yeah, he hit it right on the head. Absolutely. And it's just, again, it's the system, though, itself, because, again, the players and the players association, which I'm harder on, because we know the owners ain't shit. They're billionaires. They're going to do what's best for them and their pockets. They don't care about they don't care about the fan. They don't care about the players. They don't care about these players. These owners don't give a shit about these players. We know that, obviously. They don't care about the fans. These are the same owners that will put a damn football game in minus 10 degree weather at 9 o'clock just to make an extra buck on primetime revenue. They don't care. You know what I'm saying? They're the same owners that'll charge PSLs in New York and all these new stadiums, personal seat licenses, which is a whole nother thing. Like, these owners don't care, but I'm harder on the players, because it's like, this is, you are fighting for you, not just for you, but the guys that are coming after you. You know what I'm saying? Right. So for literally 60 players to vote and 500 to just essentially just be like, I don't care one way or another, or not vote, that's a problem.
Manny, your Lakers 2-3, man. They tread in water.
Oh, man.
They tread in water. Drummond came and got hurt right away.
Of course, right? Fucking good thing it's not, you know, turf toe.
I thought he broke it.
Yeah, I thought so too. It looks scary, but it looks like he got stepped on. He got bruised really bad.
He said somebody stepped on his toe. I was like, for real, bro. But but man, hey.
Denver, he looked good while he was out there, though.
No, he did. Uh-huh. But Denver's looking good, man.
They are.
Denver's playing to their potential. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, Denver, I don't think Denver had my issue was just Denver wasn't playing well. Like, they just weren't playing well. They weren't playing that good, solid cohesive. They weren't playing up to the back of their numbers on a basketball cards. And that's the problem. Like, that was it. I don't think Denver had a coaching issue. I don't think Denver had I do think they have a talent issue, as far as, like, sometimes I feel like you just can have too much talent and you have just so many guys, you know, it's hard to tell it's hard to tell a Michael Porter that, like, yo, you may only get 6 or 7 touches a game. You know what I'm saying? That dude is a top recruit in college. High, you know, lottery pick in the NBA. Like, it's hard to tell a cat like that who's 19 who's trying to get his his looks like, yo, you might only get 10 touches a game. You know what I mean? You might only play 25 minutes on a given night. So I think that they have a talent issue as far as that goes, but Denver's a talented team, man. They should not. You talk about Boston, Denver should be way better than how they
Yeah, play. They got up to a slow start. Dang, Shane Baker had a line.
I'll take who is it?
They're third in the West now, right?
I think they are. They're about to go on a run, man. Don't be surprised. And Denver is not a team that I worry about. They are actually Denver's fifth in the West. They are half a game behind the Lakers and two games behind the Clippers in third.
Why don't you worry about them?
I just feel like they're gonna. Like I told you before, my favorite move of the trade deadline was Aaron Gordon, adding him to that roster. His athleticism. That's another big body. This lineup is huge, and you got a bunch of athletic guys who are unselfish and who play together. Yeah. You know, you got their starting five is Joker, Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr., Will Barton, and Jamal Murray. I just love that lineup, and I love what they have coming off the bench. I just like that team. So I think that when they get together and get going, I think everything's going to be fine for that team. I wouldn't want to see Denver. That's one team I wouldn't want to see.
It's crazy to think that if the playoffs started today, Lakers-Denver in the first round.
Right. Man. That's what I'm saying. Why are you not worried? Because the matchups, depending on where they seed, you know, could make you worry. Unless you think they're going to climb up the standings.
Your
opponent.
I do. And then again, like I said, it just depends on what the Lakers look like when they get back. Because I worry more for the Lakers than I would for Denver at this point.
Why?
Really?
Because of the injuries. Because of the uncertainty. You know what I'm saying? You can't help but worry because we don't know what we're going to get when we get Anthony Davis back. Or when he's coming back, for that matter. LeBron
resumed basketball activities.
Right. LeBron I'm operating under the assumption that they'll be fully healthy.
He'll be back.
LeBron is going to be back, and he's going to be himself. But I don't know. Once again, too, I got to see Drummond with those guys. I got to see how that looks together. And I'm not saying it's LeBron, so I have less worry for LeBron than anybody in the world. It's just how are these guys going to feel when they get back out there on that court. And hopefully they play their best because I want the best basketball I can get. I just feel like Denver – is younger, they're big and strong, and they got, you know, a bunch of different people who can put the ball in the basket. And I think they're unselfish too. I just think that they're a better constructed roster.
I disagree.
Plus I like Morris. I like their bench. Paul Millsap. Is Paul Millsap still there?
Yeah, he's still there.
I know they got
Morris. He's just been replaced by Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. His favorite player.
That's his name.
All right. Green, I like those guys.
Denver's a good team, man. I still think, man, the Lakers at 100% are still the best team in the West, man. I still think I've not seen anything to sway me off of that. Look, right now, obviously, and I said what I said, right? Like I came back this week, and look, we're still treading water, 2-3. You know, that's what I mean by treading water. You just got to keep at 500, maybe a game or two below. That's treading water until you can get LeBron and AD back. And they're going to come back. I think they've taken their time with AD. I really do. I think they understand AD's injury history. They understand. And I think out of all the players, I think AD probably needed some of that extra rest. You know, people forget, like, the Lakers basically only had, what, 2.5 months of an off month, yes, maybe?
Like that.
Like, people don't realize this. Like, yo, this is a team that essentially – played basketball into October and then was back on the court early December, like, you know, mid December. Mm-hmm. Like it's crazy when you think of that, you know, when you actually think that. I think AD was, because you could just tell early on in the season that AD just wasn't all the way there physically. I feel like he took a little sabbatical. I feel like he just getting himself right. And I think the Lakers are going to be fine. I really believe that. And look, maybe it's overconfidence as a Laker fan. Yeah. Probably to an extent.
I think so.
But if LeBron and Anthony Davis are healthy, I take my chances with anybody.
Yeah, I'll take my chances with LeBron with anybody. But once again, I think it's overconfidence because I don't think that team is that good. I just really don't see it.
So LeBron and AD are healthy. Now you add Drummond.
LeBron is awesome.
Shooter.
LeBron is
Montrezl Harrell.
Yeah, I'm not a believer in Montrezl anymore. I love Montrezl, but he ain't it.
He's having just as good a season this year as he was last year.
A better season.
Yes. And Dennis Schroeder's having just as good a season, if not better, this year as a starter.
Great job, Dennis.
You said you don't think the Lakers are that good. I'm sorry. You said you don't think that they're good, or you don't believe in the Lakers. What was the exact wording?
His supporting cast this year, I just don't believe in him.
What?
I don't believe in his supporting cast this year.
We have a better supporting cast this year than last year.
I know they were bad. They shouldn't have won last year. Bubble saved Lakers last year.
Oh, they should. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. I really do think the bubble saved. I just think that. LeBron, we're not going to talk about LeBron and AD because that's something different. But as far as the supporting cast, I think I like Morris. I really do. And I like Schroeder. I don't like nobody else. I don't really like anybody else on that team. Like, name somebody else that's a good – Montrez is good, but I just – name somebody else that makes a difference.
Schroeder.
I like Schroeder. I named him.
Montrezl Harrell. You got Drummond. Now, Drummond is in a perfect role. Like, TBD. Drummond's a problem. When Drummond is your best player, it's a problem. When Drummond is your like fourth, fifth option, he's incredible, right? Like, that's a perfect role for him.
I can't call him incredible because I got to see him in that role. I've never seen him in that role. I've never seen him be incredible.
Your takes sometimes are just as bad as Nick's. I swear to God.
I wouldn't say that because I'm trying to see how many times y'all prove me wrong and stuff like this. So we're gonna see. Now we're gonna come back to this. Let's mark this spot. So
you make it sound like the Lakers are out here just playing with Robert Sacre and Wesley Johnson. Like you make it sound like this is the Kobe year, the latter Kobe year Lakers. Like, what?
They are.
Oh, what? What are you talking about?
Like I said, the Lakers have about four players that are.
I know you have Kyle Kuzma, but Kyle Kuzma is still a very good player. Like, no, Alex Caruso.
We ain't even going to mention Kyle Kuzma.
Wesley Matthews.
And we definitely going to miss Matthews. We can't talk about Matthews. We can't talk about Caruso. We can't talk about Kuzma. None of these guys are anything. The only thing we can hope for is KCP comes back and hits a couple big shots. Other than that, the Lakers are nothing.
So the Lakers are nothing.
LeBron carries that team. LeBron is not as go LeBron, and he can be anywhere, and you're gonna win. You got a shot to win the championship. But
take
AD LeBron out of this that place. Team in the playoffs last year.
AD did have a great playoffs, but like I said, I did name those two. You take two out. You add Montrezl Harrell to that, who's decent. I'm just not liking
it. Say that about anybody. Okay, you take Jokic and Murray off of the Nuggets. What are the Nuggets?
Michael Porter Jr. It's still Will Barton. Those are still good players. You still got a good team. I ain't saying that they're great, but you got a good team. You got good supporting cast. This five is trouble.
If you took Jokic and Murray off of the Nuggets, the Nuggets would be a lottery team.
No, they would not. I totally disagree.
They would not be the Nuggets. Would not be,
they wouldn't be championship.
They would be the they wouldn't be they wouldn't be the Pistons, but they would be the Kings. They'd be like the 15th pick in the draft. Like, stop
I'll
it.
Take
you
the Kings.
You know I'm right.
I'll take the Kings. I'll take the Kings because the Kings don't make the playoffs this year. So, yeah, I would say the Kings.
Maybe.
I would take the Kings because you still got, like I said, you still got Aaron Gordon. You still got Michael Porter Jr. You still got Morris.
Aaron Gordon. Again, you're taking Jokic and Murray off of. What was Aaron Gordon when he was the best guy in Orlando? Orlando
was he was still the best guy. Ain't nobody you named from the Lakers ever been the best guy.
Man, I think he only averaged 20 points once.
I still take it. He was the best guy. Nobody from the Lakers has done that. That's what I'm saying.
Who's a better player, Andre Drummond or Aaron Gordon?
Aaron Gordon.
You're crazy.
Andre Jordan was better, but right now we talking about what did you see from Andre Jordan that showed you he was better? He ain't played this year.
Yes, he has. He was averaging 17 and 14 this year.
Yes. How many? He had like a 23 rebound game this year. Like,
how long did they sit him? How long has it been since he played?
They sat him for like a month and a half, I think.
Right.
I believe so. I think it probably wasn't that long. I think
he was out about a month. It was about that long. And he's a good player. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Andre Drummond. I think he's a stat stuffer. But once again, we got to see him in that role that you're talking about. We've never seen him in that role. He's never been in it. So we can't say he's going to be
it. But we've seen him in the other role.
But yeah, and his role is grabbing rebounds and blocking shots, sort of.
So let's see if he putbacks. Can. Let's see if he can do that with the Lakers. I want to see him do it on this team.
We'll see. Like again, we'll see. That's my favorite thing. Okay. We'll see.
All right, this man, if this toe ain't right, this man ain't grabbing nobody's rebound.
Oh my God. It's the regular season, man. If that happened in the playoffs, he would play the next game. We all know that. Like, it is what it is, man. Look, listen, man. Shelton, I love you, but goddamn,
that's a good one.
I appreciate you and your views, really, man. Sometimes you passionate about your damn opinions, but God,
like, I really think y'all giving the Lakers too much credit. We can't go off past the conference. We
got to defending NBA championships.
We can't go off last year's accomplishments. We talking about now,
Shelton. They were the number one team in the West before.
We had the best record, exactly. Down. Exactly. We had the best record in the NBA.
When were they number? You said when he went down?
Yeah, before AD got hurt.
Yes. Right. Yeah, when AD got hurt.
So that's what I'm saying. Let's see what they do when these guys come back. If they come back 100%, we may be having a different conversation. I still don't fear them over other teams, though. Okay. But we'll see. I think they're going to be back 100%.
We'll be back after this quick break.
I was trying to wait until Q got here, but I don't know. I just texted him. He ain't texted me back. So,
hey, man. You know, let's rock it. Let's rock it. Yeah. If Q get here, get here.
Yeah. Y'all see the title, man. I don't know if you guys saw it. Russell Westbrook and Stephen A. Smith got into it the last few days. I haven't been watching First Take probably since the Super Bowl, honestly. So I've missed a lot of things, you know. But yeah, I caught this one. I just happened to catch this one on Twitter and saw Russ responds to Stephen A. Smith. And I had to listen to what he said. I was like, damn, he kind of spot on in terms of what he was saying. And, you know, I'm going to try to see if I can find it so you guys can hear what the brother said, just in case you haven't heard it. Hold on. I put it in the chat. Let me see if I can pull it up. We talk a lot, guys. Hold on. Where we at?
I think a lot of people knew about it.
Hey, let me tell you real quick while you're looking for it. TJ Clark says Shelton calling Bron, AD, LaMicky, and a Disney. Man, no, I'm not disrespecting. I'm not disrespecting LeBron and AD. I'm saying I like them. I just don't think they're gonna come back 100%. We got to see that happen. And with them not being 100%, this supporting cast is not gonna get it done. That's what I said.
Here you go.
Watch games and I watch these kids and these announcers, man, they get on their TV and just say anything about a kid. They don't even know him. They don't know his family. They don't know where he's from. They don't know what he's been through. They don't know his struggles. They don't know his pain. They don't know anything about the kid. But one thing said on TV can determine how you perceive this kid on TV, which will allow him not to be able to reach his goals, which will allow him not to be able to get drafted, which will allow him not to take care of his family, which will now not create generational wealth, which now, you know, makes our, you know, our people and the minorities, the underserved community, which makes that gap. It's way bigger than basketball. That's my entire life focus. And my wife, that's what she's mentioning, because we talk about all the time is that, I sit back. I don't say much. I don't like to go back and forth about people. But one thing I won't allow it to happen anymore is let people create narratives and constantly just talking shit for no reason about me, because I lay on the line every night, and I use my platform to be able to help people all across the world, and nobody can take that away from me. I've been blessed to be able to have a platform to do it, and like I said before, a championship don't change my life. I'm happy. I was a champion once I made it to the NBA. Like, I grew up in the streets. I'm a champion. Like, nobody can. I don't have to be an NBA champion. I know many people that got NBA champions that's miserable. Have done nothing.
I want to know what that is.
Have done nothing for the people in our world. And for me, man, my legacy, like I mentioned before, is not based on what I do on this court. I'm not going to play basketball my whole life. My legacy is what I do off the floor, how many people I'm able to impact and inspire along my journey, man. And that's how I keep my head down and keep it pushing, because it's very important that you don't let the negativity seep in, because it's been like that my whole career. Honestly, there's no other player that kind of takes the heat that I take constantly, but I take it as positive, because obviously I'm doing something right if people are talking about me. And that's how I feel. And I say my best foot forward, stay prayerful, keep my family close and keep it like that.
All right. So that's pretty much it. You know, he, you know, it was 2 minutes, 17 seconds. He had a lot to say. Mm-hmm. And I think he was spot on, man.
What was he spot on about?
Huh?
What was he spot on about?
I think when he was talking about, like, the people get on TV and they talk a lot about the players and criticize them. They create these narratives about them, and it could negatively impact the perception of that said player. And it could also interfere with their potential possible future, especially we're talking about like college kids and stuff like that. You know, and I agree with that. When he's talking about that, you look at Russell Westbrook and his career, and like the narrative around him, people are trying to shape it now to be about, you know, championships. And championships is a narrative around a lot of players nowadays anyway, but because of these things and people saying, oh, you can't win a championship like that, and you know, you can't do this, or constantly belittling like things that he does or accomplished, you know, it warps people's understanding or appreciation of what it is that he does. And there are certain players in the NBA that play that just won't win a championship. We all know that. That's just a pure fact. But they're really, really great players, and we're just going to have to be like, yo, this guy gets it done. Russ played in the finals, and people are like, this guy's dog shit, you know, because, you know, his game doesn't suit whatever the narrative is or whatever it is that they want to see him do. And I've always felt a certain kind of way when people jump and criticize Russ unfairly at times, it seems. So I think that the media has a way of controlling the masses, you know, and the general population that don't think for themselves or that listens to these guys. And they just go out and they regurgitate these talking points. And, you know, you can't you say, man, Russ had a monster ass triple double. Yeah, but you can't win a championship like that. But that's not what I'm talking about. Like, this man had 21 assists, blah, 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 blah. And then you just go back to the same thing you heard Colin Cowherd say. And it's like, I think we've got to get to some type of medium to where you can criticize certain aspects or a moment, but then like, but kind of keep it within the context of the game.
I would have agreed with him had he not said anything, but to be honest with you, I don't agree with him. I do not. I think that as a player and a competitor, my sole focus in playing sports is to win championships. After your career is over, if you didn't win one, you left everything out there on that court. Well, first off, making the type of money they're making, you better be built for this criticism because it's coming. That's part of that money. That's part of what you're getting paid for. My job is to watch you play and to criticize you if I feel like, as a fan, I'm a fan. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm still paying to watch you play, so I can have an opinion on your game. But the thing of it is, when your career is over, if you didn't win a championship, then you can say, I didn't win a championship, but I solidified my future. I took care of my family, and it was a victory for me just to get here. But if you're celebrating that victory now while you're in the game, that ain't good enough for me. If you're celebrating having triple doubles while you're in the game and you're not winning, that's not good enough for me.
He doesn't celebrate triple doubles like that, though.
He just told me, based off what he just said, winning the championship is not important to him.
I don't think he said that.
He didn't say that.
No, I feel like we're having I feel like we're
he said if I don't win a championship, that's okay. Because right. I've overcome a lot to get here. He's played in the finals where a lot of players haven't even gotten to that before.
Right. That's, at a young age too. Right.
That's right. That's why I'm such I appreciate it. Once again, when my career is over, if I look back on that and say that at this point, I don't have a problem with it. But in the midst of your career and still in your prime, to say it's okay if I don't win a championship is not okay for me. That's not okay. You think Jordan would have said it's okay if I never get past the Pistons? No, he wouldn't have never said no junk like that. What Magic had said, it's okay if I never beat Boston. No, it's not. It's not okay. That's not okay. That means you ain't giving me everything you got because you just happy to be here.
Okay,
yeah, you overcame a lot to get in. Like I said, I'm a Russ fan because I saw him at UCLA. I saw him play. I saw him play and be a decent player. He was a great athlete. And he's blossomed into a tremendous Hall of Fame player. But at the same time, if you got more to give, you got – once again, we know Stephen A. just say whatever. I ain't really thinking about what he said. But for him to respond that way, to me, that's not the response. For me, the response is, I'm going to give you everything I got every night I'm out there on that floor. Now, I want you to continue the off-the-court stuff. I love to see them thrive off the court. I love it. You know what I'm saying? That's what they're supposed to do. That teaches the younger guys what to do, how to handle themselves. I love Russ and what he's doing, being a family man, because you know that's missing in sports. You know what I'm saying? And no, he didn't go off and marry, you know, some supermodel he met. He's still with his, you know, he's doing it the way you wish it was done by more. But at the same time, to tell me that that's enough for you, I don't want to hear that as a fan. I don't want to hear you talking that way. Because to me, you telling me you accepting mediocrity, and that's what I hear. That's what, even if it ain't what you're saying, that's what my ears are hearing. As a competitor, I don't feel like that. It ain't never good enough.
So I've been dying to talk about this topic because I feel like we're talking about two different things. And I feel like the climate has a lot to do with this. I feel like we are in a climate in the world and society now where you either have to be a fanboy or a hater. There can't be any nuance, right? Like, if you're not praising someone 24/7, then you're a hater and vice versa. Like, I hate that we live in a world now. Like, look, whatever you may think about Stephen A. Smith, whether you like his commentary, whether you think he's got an agenda, of course he has an agenda. Everybody on TV has an agenda to one point or another. I'm not even saying I fully agree. Like, I've been critical of Russell Westbrook, but my criticism has always been about basketball. My criticism is not about who he married. My criticism is not about who the man that he is. Look, Russell, I wouldn't know Russell Westbrook if he fell on me. Like, I don't know that man. Right. I will never criticize another athlete, a musician, or whatever. I just criticize their art, what they do, the service that they provide me as a consumer, as a fan. That's it. Like, this thing that, oh, well, you know, criticizing me, you know, you don't know the man that I am. First of all, we're not talking about you, the man. We're talking about you, the basketball player. Like, I can watch a game that Russell Westbrook plays, and if he misses a clutch free throw that he should have made, I'm going to critique you for not making that free throw. I'm not going to critique you because you didn't give money to the hood or that you didn't pull your people out of mediocrity. Like, that's irrelevant to the conversation. Like, you could be a great person, a great human being, and also have missed a clutch free throw that cost your team a victory. Those two things can exist in the same plane. Like, anybody that's critiquing Russell Westbrook, not saying everybody, because of course there's people that have agendas that just don't like an athlete because of the way he looks or the way he talks or the way he carries himself. I get that. I'm just saying the majority of people, we on Dead End Sports, we criticize athletes all the time. It's never personal. Not also attacking these dudes personally. Like, we're just seeing what we watch and we analyze it and we bring it raw, uncut, unfiltered the way we see it. And it's like, that is okay. But when these athletes now start conflating this and making it, oh, well, you're attacking me and stopping generational wealth. What? What are you talking about? That's not stopping generational wealth. If anything, the system that you're a part of is stopping generational wealth. The owners are stopping generational. What Stephen A. Smith gets on TV and babbles about for 2 hours isn't stopping your generational wealth. Like, that, it just annoys me now that we live in a culture where you can't critique someone on what they do and not have it be like this personal attack on this man. Like, someone may watch our show and not like us. They can is an idiot and he's pro-black and he doesn't make any sense, blah, blah, blah. And they may think Shelton Jay has some weird views and they may think I talk too much. They're not attacking me personally as a man or as a father or culturally or whatever. They're not attacking us. You don't like my show? Fine. Don't watch. Don't listen. But this idea that, like, you have to praise people. And like, with that praise, everything about them is wonderful. Everything is great. Everything is amazing. They're the greatest player ever. And, oh, by the way, they're great in the community. And the same thing, like, if they do something wrong or they're terrible players. Oh, he's a terrible player. And not only this, he's a terrible husband. And he doesn't give back to it. Like, what is that? Like, nobody, I've never seen anybody go on TV and say, yo, you know what? Russell Westbrook can't win a championship. And, oh, by the way, he's a damn Uncle Tom. Like, I've never heard anybody say that, right? All the criticisms I've heard about Russell Westbrook, and I'm just using him as an example, because I know this applies to all sports and as far as just criticism of athletes in general. But, like, you could criticize an athlete and not have it be personal. Now, I agree with you when it does cross a line. Like, when Skip Bayless was calling Chris Bosh Christina Bosh, like, that's personal, because now you're attacking that man's manhood. Now you're saying that he's less than a man. Now you're calling him a female. Now you're questioning that man's manhood. That's, yeah, absolutely. You draw the line there. But Stephen A. Smith saying that, look, I'm tired of triple doubles. I want championships. We can have a debate about that. That is a fair argument. Now, I don't agree with that necessarily, but that is a fair and precise critique of Russell Westbrook's game and his career. And that's what it should be about. Not about generational wealth and who he married, and all due respect to his wife. And I get it. It's his wife. She's going to have her booze back. I don't expect anything less of that. But to make it like a bubble, you're attacking my husband. And no, they're like, what? What are we talking about here? It's just saying that, yo, triple doubles are great and all, but it doesn't transition to success when it comes to the highest level, when it's championships. That's it. And I'm not even saying I agree with that. I'm just saying that the critique should be about basketball and basketball only, or football, baseball, whatever sport you play.
Stephen A. Smith is a part of that system that you alluded to when you said that the system is what's causing them from receiving generational wealth. So when Russ speaks on that, he's talking about Stephen A. Smith and the system that Stephen A. Smith is a part of that will make you think that a guy who does great things is not good. Colin Cowherd had a lot of people convinced that Tomlin, who had won 13 games in a season, was not a good coach. These are the things that happen when you overlook certain points to push a certain narrative. And these things are harmful and detrimental to these athletes because it poisons the minds of organizations, of the fans, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the things that when Stephen A. Smith, who has always praised Russell Westbrook, and I agree with his response, but there's a bigger thing that's at play here. So when Shelton says that what I hear is that Russ isn't giving his all, I think that's unfair because Russ is always giving his all. Like, yes, he's always leaving on the court. So because he's saying that he as a player is okay, that at the end of his career, I'm fine if I don't win a championship, doesn't mean he's not trying to win a championship right now. You see what I'm saying? So that's where I kind of take issue with what you're saying, Sheldon, because there's not a moment where Russ isn't on that court and he's not trying to win. He may, now, basketball-wise, he may take back shots. He may not have the right basketball IQ to folks, but he's still trying to win. So when guys like Stephen A. Smith get on here and say, yeah, that's cute, but I only care about championships. Well, Stephen A., he's on the Wizards. You know that team is not going to win a championship. Stephen A., do you know that probably the reason why he has to put up these gaudy numbers is because, have you looked at the roster? There's no Bradley Beal. Russ has to do all of these things in order to at least try to win a goddamn game. What about when Bradley Beal was there and Bradley Beal was putting up ecstatic numbers? What was the criticism of Bradley Beal? People looked at Bradley Beal like he was a victim. Washington, you know, we got to get him out of Washington. People didn't jump on him. And Bradley Beal is far less accomplished than Russell Westbrook. So It's just like, I think that, like, to your point about criticisms, yeah, I take my criticism, but I understand it's fair game. And I give it, then I can take it. And that's fine, because I get on here, I talk about people, I expect people to talk about the show that I do, or some of the things that I say. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, So I understand that. I think Russ, I don't even know what his wife said, but I think what Russ is just kind of maybe looking at the bigger issue or the bigger thing at play and less about him personally.
I really think it's personal. I think that his statement was about himself. I don't see where it's about a bigger issue, which it is a bigger issue, but don't turn it into one because somebody said something about you. My thing is you let your own on-court and off-court actions speak for himself. Also, this man didn't criticize him off-court. He criticized him on-court. And that's his prerogative. I mean, you take that and you just keep it moving. Once again, you know, as a competitive athlete, you just got to go out there and compete. And do not tell me it's okay to not have a championship while you're playing. You tell me that after you're done. That's just how I feel. I think you should say that after it's over.
His wife basically brought up that these announcers, media people have a lot of power to sway people's opinion, which they do to an extent. Yes, they do. I'm not arguing. They basically brought up the moment in UCLA where she said an announcer, or they talked about how the announcer for UCLA, who was the same announcer back when Russell Westbrook was in college, said that Russell Westbrook wouldn't make it in the NBA. And he said like, oh, this guy could have ruined my career because somebody would have heard what he said and fell victim to that and not giving him. I'm just paraphrasing. That's not exactly. You guys can Google what his wife said, whatever. Right. So it was like a long Instagram tirade, whatever. And look, I respect her opinion. That's her husband. She got to stand by her man. I'm not knocking her. Nah, whatever. My thing is like, okay, that man could have probably stopped a team or two from drafting you. At the end of the day, Russell Westbrook was still going to be Russell Westbrook because the talent at the end of the day wins out. Like at the end of the day, your talent is going to win out.
Not always.
You are going to be, not always, not always, but the majority of time. A team may have not drafted Russell Westbrook because they heard this announcer in Westwood, California, somewhere, criticize Russell Westbrook. Maybe, I don't know. Who knows? We'll never know for sure, obviously. But could that have stopped the team maybe from drafting Russell Westbrook? Okay, probably it did. And maybe instead of a third pick, he would have been a number one pick. I don't know that. Nobody will never know, right? But at the end of the day, Russell Westbrook is still a Hall of Fame basketball player. He's still one of the great point guards in history. One of. Like, his talent still rolled because his talent was bigger than any criticism or anything else that would have prevented him from achieving those goals. So that's my thing. Like, my issue is we can have a conversation about your skills on the court and have it be that. When you start bringing up that, oh, well, they're attacking me and they're attacking my character and what I've done for the community and all that. And I'm like, that's all great, but that's not what we're talking about. For instance, right. Again, I bring up the example. Someone can watch our show tonight and not like what Ken is talking about and say, yo, Ken is terrible. I hate his takes, which I'm sure people on the comments list have. I'm sure they have. They bring up, they hate what Ken is saying. That doesn't mean that he's saying Ken's a bad father, that he doesn't take care of his family, or that he's a terrible human being, right, or he's this, or he's that. Like, that doesn't mean that. It just means you don't like his show. And if you don't like my show, then that's fine. That's not going to stop Ken from doing what he do, from putting on a great product on all platforms and still doing his thing. And if somebody doesn't like his show, fine. Great. Sorry to hear that. Right. Whatever. There's other people that do. Like, that's okay. Like, my thing is, like, you can criticize someone and not be a hater. And you can show praise and praise someone and not be a fanboy. It's okay. Like, but now we live in this culture where it's like, if you don't just sit there on an interview and say, yep, Russell Westbrook's the greatest thing ever. Look at these triple doubles. I mean, it's amazing. It's wonderful. Like, you yourself, Ken, said that the reason you got mad about Brad Stevens was that they showered praise on him for being the next Greg Popovich or the next this guy, the next that, right? So even praise can get you hated, because then there's a segment of the population that thinks it's too much love, it's too much praise, or it's undeserved. So it works both ways, man.
Yeah, it does. Hey, we got a couple of super chats real quick too. One from Maurice Wilkins. Appreciate you, Maurice.
Shout out. Yep.
Stephen A. hates the Brooklyn Super Team, then criticizes players for not having a ship. What if Russ go join a top contender for less money?
Exactly. And look, And again, I want to be clear. I don't agree with everything Stephen A. is saying on this issue. I don't agree with Stephen A. at all. I don't think,
right.
And I especially don't agree with him on what he's saying. But this isn't about what Stephen A. said or said. I don't think you even have to agree one iota of what he's saying. I just don't like when he made this personal by bringing up generational wealth and stopping me from feeding my family and all the things that I do in the community. Like, bro, this nigga didn't even say any of that. He just said he don't want to see you.
He said what he actually said was improve your 3-point shooting. And he put up a stat where Russ shot like 30% from three. But my thing is on that, and the reason why I didn't even agree with that is because if that's the case, everybody got something to improve. You know what I'm saying? Right. Okay. That's like saying every player has a weakness. You know what I'm saying?
Steph should get better defensively. Like, right. Shit.
You know what I'm saying? LeBron is still LeBron. He doesn't shoot great free throws, but he's still LeBron. You know what I'm saying? It don't stop him from being one of the greatest to ever play. So in saying that, I was like, man, whatever, man. It's just one little. But to me, that's all I saw Stephen A. said before the response. So in saying that, I can't get with that response. To me, was too great from
the critics. And to your point, before you read that super chat, I just want to piggyback on something for Ken. Because that's the thing. I agree with what you're saying, Ken, because this applies to black quarterbacks when they come out of college. And there's always that coded narrative of like the black quarterback is, you know, he's athletic, but does he know the smarts of the game? You know, does he know, you know, is, you know, he's not a great leader. We all know that
Lamar Jackson.
Right. And now they're doing it with Justin Fields. Right. Like, so, so I know that this happens. I'm just saying that we can't take one scenario and say, well, that happens in all scenarios to try to conflate it. Because I think that now, because the other thing people don't want to see is that athletes like to control the narrative just as much as fans, just as much as people, media people do. Like, athletes want to control the narrative too. Like, They love to control the narrative too. So it works hand in hand.
So yeah, hold on. So yeah, so there are two things here, and I finally read what she said. So yeah, is the media injecting an opinion into people? And then there's Russ responding to what his experience was with that and basically saying that I'm not going to let you guys define my success. You know, because I'm going to lay it on the line. My goal is to win the championship. But if it doesn't happen, cool. My success is based on, or it won't be defined by what you guys are asking of me or think I should do or acquire. I think that's why he opened up his wife's comments about the generational wealth part, because Russ was subjected to a lot of that. From what I heard, based on, you know, his history and read that, you know, I think that's why he wears the number zero, is that people always kind of looked at him and never really gave him a shot. So to your point, his talent, he always had to work harder than twice hard than the next person, because there were people out there shaping and molding how people perceived him. What if Russ didn't have that mentality? Imagine the other players that are out there that don't have that same mentality. And they're not given the opportunities to succeed or to even get a shot because of what other people are saying about them. One could say, well, that's that person's fault. But you can also look at the system that also has a way of holding and knocking black people down. Imagine if Lamar Jackson, because of the media's perception and the systemic things that go into it, never got a shot. He wouldn't be MVP. He wouldn't be a superstar right now. He wouldn't be any of these things. So these are the things that we have to be mindful of and point out when we do. And see, the thing with Stephen A. Smith is, and I'm glad that comment, you know, the person pointed it out. He does that. Like, which one is it, bro? Pick a side. You know, so it's like he's contradicting himself. You know,
he does contradict himself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, all the time. All the time,
yeah. But I don't take. But that's the thing. Like, maybe it's just me because I don't watch these shows. Like, I don't understand it. And I'm not saying, obviously these shows are successful and they're on the air for a reason, right? So I'm not trying to knock them in that respect. Like, but I just don't like. I don't watch these shows. So to me, their impact honestly just misses me because it's like I don't take what these people say seriously. Like, I don't take what Max Kellerman says seriously about this stuff or Stephen A. or whatever, because I. Right, other than boxing. And look, Steve, and I'm not calling Stephen A because there's things that I do agree Stephen A. Smith on. Even in this discussion right here, there's some things that he said that I agree on, and there's other things that I don't. Like, but that's the thing. These arguments, these discussions are about nuance. And it's like we've lost all ability to have discussions where we're going to disagree and we can look at it from different perspectives. It's like, no, Stephen A is a coon and he's a hater, or Stephen A is right and Russell Westbrook's a scum, right? Like, it's one or the other. It's like, it's never like, no. both are making accurate points. One is saying one thing, one is saying the other. To your point, Ken, like, yes, I understand that. Yes. So what if Russell Westbrook had listened to the haters all his life, not just in college, but all his life? He wouldn't be the guy that he is. Thank God. Thank God that he didn't. Thank God. And I wish that more athletes, more people in general, had that mindset, right? Like, I wish more people just wore that chip on their shoulder. I bring up Tom Brady, a guy who's hated by half of the roster on this show, right? Like, say what you want to say about Tom Brady. This man was the 172nd pick in the NFL draft, was considered skinny and frail, would never cut it. And hey, that man worked his ass off, had a chip on his shoulder, to this day still has that chip on his shoulder, and worked himself up to be the quarterback that he is today. Whether you like him, whether you like his politics, whatever. Shout out and salute to that man. Shout out to anybody. I'm sure all of us, at one point or another, people doubted us. People told us we wouldn't do this, or we wouldn't do that, or we wouldn't do this. Like, I had people in my family that told me it was crazy. Like, what, you're going to host a sports show? Like, what? Like, you ain't getting on TV. The world changed. Podcasts, internet, you know what I mean? Like, more people in the world should have that mentality and that attitude that, like, I'm going to give a fuck. I'm going to accomplish what I want to do. If you have a passion, if you have a dream, if there's a kid watching this, take the example that Russell Westbrook showed you and use that in your life or whatever it is you want to do. That can be accurate. And then we can also say, yeah, Russell Westbrook needs to get better with his 3-point shot. And yes, Russell Westbrook needs to win the championship to be considered on that top echelon of great point guards. Whether you agree with that or not, that's a fair discussion and it's a fair criticism. That's my point.
That's why I think that show, First Take, is a great idea that went bad. You're trying so hard to be. When it started, I thought it was great. I was like, this is cool. We got a debate show.
And when it was Cold Pizza? Yeah.
Yeah, Cold Pizza was a great show to me. I really liked it. And I liked the idea and the premise behind it. But it turned into a circus. And that's what kind of happened. Like, let me say what the best take I can throw out there. It turned into something else. But at the same time, I just hate that players aren't more thick-skinned. I ain't saying that you shouldn't take it personal, but continue to use it for fuel, because you're going to get your flowers. When he's done, he's going to be one of the greatest. I just don't want to hear, I didn't hear him say nothing about, yeah, I'm trying to win championships. I heard him say, it don't matter if I win a championship. That's what I heard.
So you don't think he's trying to win a championship?
That ain't the point. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying what I heard. So, even if he is, as a fan, I don't want to not hear it. You understand what I'm saying?
So you think he is trying to win a championship?
I think he is. But once again, it's not just about me. I'm saying, like, what I'm saying is, a person who hears, what you hear is very important. And what you're putting out there to your fans.
Communication is what the listener does.
Yeah. So that part is what was missing for me as a person. I didn't like the way that sounded.
What Shelton is saying is, like, no Wizards fan right now wants to hear, you know, Russell Westbrook say, you know, if I don't win a championship, I'm good because at least I've won it. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great for you, but nigga, I'm a Wizards fan. I don't want to hear that. Like, I want to hear you saying, how the hell are we going to get better to win a championship? Like, that is fair. Those two things can exist in the same plane.
Right. Even a Wizards fan who has no shot, absolutely no shot, other than in Nick's mind, winning the 50 games. But even that fan who has no chance does not want to hear their best player or their second best player says, I might not, you know, I ain't gonna win no chance. In your brain, you like, man, we gonna get there and we gonna get there. You know, give me the wrestling speech. Make me feel good about what you're doing up there. Make me feel like you do, even though we know, like I said, I watched this man at UCLA. I saw him with this 100-mile-an-hour motor, just go, 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 go. And I've always appreciated him as a player, but I just didn't like the Kevin Durant-like response. I just didn't like it. I would have preferred him just, you know, cuss Stephen A. out and keep on going. Don't give me the excuse like I won because I got this already. You know what I'm saying? Especially a person that works hard. I work.
You know, Damian Lillard kind of said the same thing about championships too.
He did.
But I didn't.
But I'm just saying when we take these certain sentences and, like, we hear it a certain way or it becomes misconstrued, it's like this. We you know, it's not them saying that they don't want to win one. It's just that there are certain things that they're not gonna do, or they're gonna, like, Damian Lillard
literally said that there are things that are more important to me. He said, I want to win one.
Yeah,
there are more things that are more important to me. And, you know, I'm not going to sell myself out, you know, to do that.
And now I know what you're talking about with Damian Lillard. Like, and he's absolutely right. And I respect Russell. Like, I'm not a.
And Russ kind of said the same thing, just in a different way.
He did. And but again, two people can say the same things, and one will hear one person, and then the audience will hear one thing from one person one way, and hear another person from another perspective from another way. Like, that's just how communication in life works, right?
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, like, I keep wanting to call him Russell Wilson. Russell Westbrook isn't wrong in what he's saying. And I'm not saying I even disagree with him. What I'm saying is, you cannot be mad that there is going to be a segment of Wizards fans that are going to look at that and be like, what? Like, nigga, I'm a Wizards fan since 1970. Like, that's all cool and all that you Father Flanagan and you want to save the world and all that good stuff. And you made something of yourself. But, nigga, how are we going to win this championship? Like, how are we going to, like, I want to hear that. And that's fine. Whether I agree with that or not, that is fine. Mm-hmm. Like, that's my thing. Like, two things can exist at the same time. Like, what Stephen A. Smith is accurate and what Russell Westbrook's response is accurate too. Right. They could coexist in the same place.
And he was answering questions that wasn't even asked. Like I said, Stephen A. didn't criticize this man on his raising his kids. He criticized him on playing basketball. So in this case, Stephen A., like I said, the criticism to me was just a storyline that didn't have to be made. But he said that this guy was an awesome guy. In Stephen A.'s soliloquy or talk, he was talking about how great of a person Russell Wilson. I mean, Russell Westbrook.
He does that to build a person up, just to tear him down.
Just to tear him down.
Just to hide behind it.
But like I said, the best response to me would have been no response. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep playing ball, and lay low. That's what you need to do. Just had an amazing game. Just keep playing. He had a triple double again tonight. Just keep playing.
He does that, but you know, you have KD that go a Rappaport. You have Damian Lillard that goes at Skip Bayless, who fucking calls in the show and actually goes on the show to debate Skip Bayless. Like, I think I'm at the point now where these athletes do need to fight back. Don't let these people continue to like. I'm not. I get you on the thick skin, but at the same time, you shouldn't have a license to just go on TV and just say whatever without a response.
You've been critical of Russ of Lamar Jackson, Arsha, right? Like, you've been critical of him. Mm. Like, what if Lamar Jackson came up, wanted to come? Well, hey, we invite Lamar Jackson to want to come on Dead End Sports. Shit, I hope he is watching, right? But it's like, what if he came on here and debated you and said, yo, you full of shit, and you this, and the other. Why are you talking about me? Like, your intention is not to demean this man. You're just making a critical analysis and an evaluation on
But if he wanted to, that's fair, because I've opened that up. So if he has something to say in retort to what I said, that's fine.
But see, that's what I'm saying. That's a great point. Russ's response was not in retort to what Stephen A. was saying. His response was, I'm this great man. So what you saying don't matter. That's what I took from it. I got what I needed out of this. Look where I came from to be where I'm at. These people shouldn't be talking about us. The man wasn't talking about you. He was talking about your game. That's what he should be talking about.
But that is a response, though. He said, I don't care about championships. So he's like, okay, yeah, you may not care about all this other stuff and you want to see a championship, but like, I'm responding to that point. And then, of course, he added the other stuff to it.
But what does that accomplish, though? I can sit here today, right? Like, I remember when Shape of Water won Best Picture. Like, follow me here for a second. Shape of Water won Best Picture at the Oscars. I thought it was a terrible movie. I didn't like it. I did not like that movie.
I don't like it either. It's a terrible movie.
It won Best Picture, right?
It's overrated, I should say.
Guillermo del Toro can listen to what I said on a podcast one day and decide he wants to debate me. Here's why you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. You've never been a filmmaker. This is why this movie is a technical masterpiece. That's not going to change my opinion on it. Like, oh, okay, well, I respect your opinion. Yay, great. You think it's great. It won. Like, whatever. I'm still going to feel how I feel. Just like if Lamar Jackson decided to come on Dead End Sports and debate you and think and say, Ken, you're wrong. This is why I'm this. And this is why I'm already great. And yeah, blah, blah, blah. Like, is that going to change how you view Lamar Jackson? No, you're still going to have the next game against Denver, and Lamar Jackson does the things that you criticize him for. You're still going to have these same opinions about Lamar Jackson's game that you would have had otherwise.
And Manny, right? what you just said too, I wouldn't mind. Ken, you're right. Both of you are right. I would love for these athletes to sit down and debate with these guys. What you said was, if he came on the show and debated. Now, if Russ had went on that show and confronted Stephen A. Smith and defended himself, hey, that's great. That's great TV. That's what I want to see. I want you to go tell him why he's wrong about his opinion of you. That makes sense to me. That does. But to tell me, like I said, to say what you're saying about me and why I hadn't won and why I haven't won a championship doesn't matter to me, because I've already won. I've already made my money. I've already done this. That just ain't the right response for me.
But he has, though. Like, he's overcome a lot. Those are victories in life.
I 100% agree with you, Ken. But that's not for me. That wasn't the response that I wanted from him. I would have rather somebody stood up and said that for him than him saying it for himself. Because to me, you're saying, I've already won. There's no need for me to even really compete as hard because I already got what I came in for.
Thank you. He didn't say not compete as hard.
He didn't know. I'm saying that's how certain fans will take that. I mean, like I said, from a fan's perspective, and I understand not every athlete is in it for the love of the game. They're not. Not every athlete, just like, and I was going to say this, I was going to ask y'all this earlier when we were talking about the owners. Not everybody is about winning championships. They're not. You were talking about this earlier, Manny, when we talked about the owners. Some owners, they're not even sports fans.
The majority of them are.
Correct. These guys are looking at sheets that tells them a breakdown of pluses and minuses. That's what they're looking at. They don't care about who's winning the championship. They don't care about who their best player is. All they want to see is that bottom line in green. That right there is what a lot of sports are about. But if you're talking about being a great, if you're talking about being a perennial champion, that stuff is important. I don't think any of the greats we talk about have ever said that's not important to me. Nobody on that dream team, I guarantee you, would have ever said whether I win a championship or not, it doesn't matter.
Chuck said it after his
after the fact.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think Chuck think about that every night. You know he do with Shaq be getting on him.
That's absolutely. He know
it matter. It matter.
And look, I get what you're saying. No one is questioning that Russell Westbrook has won at life. He's got a beautiful family, beautiful wife. He's got a $200-300 million probably in the bank. His kids are set for the rest of their lives. No one is critiquing that. Like, I'll use you as an example again. You are a Black man, grew up in the South, build a podcast network out of nothing. Out of nothing. A media network out of nothing. And it continues to grow and be successful. And you employ predominantly Black and brown people. Someone will listen to your review of Godzilla versus Kong this weekend on Frames Per Second, and not like what you have to say, and say, Ken doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. I'm going to leave a negative review on Apple Podcast. That still doesn't invalidate everything that you accomplished. That doesn't invalidate everything that you will accomplish, or that I have accomplished, or Sheldon, or whoever is a part of this network will accomplish. It's just an opinion. Whether you agree, you don't agree, it is what it is. Like, these athletes need to learn, like, yo, and that's the other thing. You're not going to win. You're not going to change anybody's mind. You know how you win that argument? You know how Russell Westbrook
on the court,
winning championship. That's how he wins it, and continuing to play at it.
Winning the championship, maybe, but on the court, he wouldn't win. Like, he does great things on the court, and it's still never enough. And I guess the reason why I rock with Westbrook is because since day one, when people say shit about me, I'll be in the comments talking back.
But you know what I mean, right? Like, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But that's why I think, you know, I think it's fair. I like that. And I, you know, so I don't know, man. I think it was something else I wanted to ask y'all, but I can't remember what it was.
We got two other super chats while you think.
Yeah, go ahead.
Get to the super chats.
Darius Williams, we appreciate you. He says, so that's why Stephen A. Smith has that whole thing about LeBron James. He's a great man, a great father, a great actor, philanthropist, stuff like this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's a shield for criticisms, because whenever then that's all Stephen A. did is just be like, I've said nothing but great things about Westbrook, which he has, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's one thing, you know, Westbrook get upset, which they did. But, you know, at the same time, Stephen A. like, and Stephen A. says it all the time, you know, bring it on. He don't run from it. He's like, look, I say it. And if you got something to say, then I welcome it. It's fair.
Come on.
He's cool with it.
Right. And you have to be that way.
That's the one thing I respect about him is the fact that he's always ready for somebody to challenge what he says.
And Skip Bayless, too. Skip Bayless. Yeah. To his credit.
Yeah.
I don't agree with most of what they say. But some of it I do. And the fact that they're willing to defend whatever they say, I have to respect.
I think. You know, I guess we'll get ready to close out. And I think, it was about what you were saying, Manny, is that, you know, there's the Mannys, the Sheltons of the world that don't listen to what they say or influence by what they say, because you guys are free thinkers, you know, same as I. Like, because I disagree with a lot of stuff they say, but there are a lot of sheep in the world. And these people are the ones that they're impacting and affecting. And that's where it kind of annoys me, because you guys are shaping and creating this idea about this person. And then as soon as they respond, then you go and create another idea about this person. And then the person just can't win. So, you know, but, and, you know, so that's why, you know, we exist. Cause yeah, we're going to do it, say the same shit, you know, just in a different manner. You know, because we're probably disagreeing with what we're hearing, like the whole Kawhi Leonard is the best player in the world thing by Max Kellerman last year, or the how he jumped on Tom Brady in the clip, like all these different things that these people put out, you know, and they influence a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but this is the era that we are in.
You know, the other aspect of this too, I'm a big believer in this, like, ain't nothing changed, man. It's just technology is just advanced it to a wider audience, man. Like, you don't mm-hmm. think, like, in the 80s, players were getting criticized too. Like, they called the NBA the Coke League. Like, remember Magic when he had a terrible finals, or he struggled in some big moments in the 84 finals? They called him Tragic Johnson instead of Magic Johnson. Like, you don't think people in the 70s weren't criticizing athletes? Like, you don't think Dave DeBuscher got criticized in New York when they didn't win in New York? You know what I mean? Patrick Ewing got criticized in New York, like, when he didn't win the championship. Like, this has been happening since the beginning of time in sports, man. You're going to have people that criticize you, you're going to have people that love you. And it's just, and all the done is just create, it's just expanded it. So now, like, people like me, you can get on YouTube and have our little bullpen where we can talk to our fans and just criticize people or praise people some more. Like, and it'll never change, man. I just think that, man, these athletes have to have thicker skin, man. This is where I draw the line. If somebody's coming at you and disrespecting you, disrespecting your family, coming out, you know, like, again, the whole Christina Bosch thing. Like, yeah, that, absolutely. Chris Bosch was well within his right to come at Skip Bayless's neck. I'm just saying everything
out the window,
absolutely. It's just, but when it's just between the white lines, if I'm criticizing how you play, how you performed, or how you didn't perform, that's fair game to me. And to your point, too, it's fair game that you come back at me. But to bring up, like, generational wealth and, well, I've done this for the community, it's like, yeah, that's great, but that's not what we were talking about.
Right. And you have to understand, and to close that out, well, let me say the super chat, and then I'm going to close it out, because I got a good thing on that. Paul Brown III said, it's better to tell the truth than to try to control the narrative. I like them both ways. And it is true. I like the truth. I really do. But I like both, because both, one is entertaining, whereas, you know, one is what it is. But, Manny, to your point as well, to add on to what you're saying, you wouldn't have this generational wealth and you wouldn't have this platform if not for sports fans. And the point of sports fans is to have an opinion on your game. So if somebody's giving a critique of your game and saying something about your game, that's just what it is. Because without that critique, without that narrative, there wouldn't be sports there wouldn't be this wealth for you to have. The whole point is to be competitive. The whole point is to have somebody. You got your fans and you got your naysayers. You got to have the good with the bad. That's why in wrestling, I used to be a wrestling fan, as a matter of fact, as a kid. And you had to have a heel. Without those heels and people to hate, you couldn't love anybody. So there's no point in watching it. Just participation trophies otherwise. So, yeah, you got to have that. That's just part of it. And if people stop criticizing, people going to stop watching. So take it.
What would we do? Look how bland and generic it would be if we didn't have those moments of criticism. Like, what if we didn't have those moments? Yeah, hey, Patrick Mahomes is great. I know he had a bad Super Bowl, but he's great.
Yeah, this show would last about 15 minutes.
Exactly. Like, nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to talk about that. We want to talk about, like, right. Dude, like, why he didn't play well? Why he was staying the rush? And, like, nobody wants to hear that, right? So it's a double-edged sword, man. It's a double-edged sword. And I think the thing that makes it worse is the whole KD thing. I know we didn't really talk about it, but KD, like, what are you doing? Like, why are you going back and forth with Michael Rapaport? Like, what do you win out of that? Like, what do you get out of that? Now, if anything, I feel like you've lost more than gained.
You know what, Manny, though? I'm mad at Michael Rapaport for that because...
Yeah, he wrong for that. Yeah, like, he shouldn't have put that.
I'm mad at him. I don't mind him going back at Michael Rapaport. I don't mind you coming back to defend yourself. You know, that was behind closed doors. It wasn't like he came out to us. Michael Rapaport put that out. He just was talking trash to man to man. I respect that. I mean, you hit him up in his DMs like, come see me. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nothing wrong with that to me. And I don't mind the passion. But once again,
but it's KD. And we've seen these instances with KD. Like, KD got like 16 burner accounts. So this is, he can't be trusted. Like, KD does this to, like, KD will get on here and debate me on Twitter about some dumb shit that I said about his game. Like, why? Like, again, this is like, why you, like, again, I bring up, and I know it's cliche to bring up, well, Mike would have never done it, but can you imagine Mike getting on Twitter and, like, critiquing a fan that critiqued him for...
I don't know, man. He might.
Yeah, Mike would do that.
Mike was wired different.
Mike would do it, but Mike would then... But Mike was wired in the sense that, you know what? Oh, you want to talk about me? All right, here's 55, game four.
Yeah.
Oh, you
Kobe, think Kobe was like... I think he said he's been above the fray. Yeah, he's exactly. Yeah, like, he don't care about
that. More athletes should be above the fray when it comes to this stuff, not the disrespect, I'm just saying this stuff.
Yeah, most of those guys would punish the people on the court. I don't mind responses as long as it's like I said, if it's within context, if you say something about me and I text you back about it personally, and I'm okay with that. If that's what you're going to use as fuel, then use it. But once again, don't gloss it over to everybody else like it's just, oh, it's nothing. But this is how I feel and your feelings are hurt. Nah, come on, man. Yeah, that man criticized you, and that's what it
is. Or bring up something totally irrelevant to the conversation. Like, oh,
right,
well,
right.
I don't think Stephen A. Smith was talking about that.
Because I appreciate it. Once again, I'm happy for him. I'm happy he can take care of his kids and all that stuff. Any black man that's successful, or any man for that
matter,
that's a win. But I don't want to talk about that win right now. Right now, I want to talk about the three-point percentage. Let's make some shots. Tigolo Kane just sent a super chat saying Westbrook got a triple double tonight and they lost by 30 to Detroit. So,
that Wizards team is horrible.
Yeah, in all fairness, that's a horrible team. No Bradley Beal either. So it is what it is. But I still don't want him. I don't want him to tell me it's horrible. I don't want to hear him say that.
LeBron did it. LeBron said he has a bad team. He said we top 10 as fuck.
LeBron didn't give a damn, man. LeBron was like, man, get these niggas out of here.
All right. Well, I'm sure because I need to read up on the KD thing, so we may revisit that because there's a whole.
I'm sure we'll revisit this too.
Q has some thoughts. He just couldn't make it tonight, but we thank you guys for showing up. We're glad you guys appreciate it and enjoyed the episode. I think I saw one of the comments, and we'll be back Tuesday. I think everybody will be back. I think FIFO will be back then, and of course Nick was already still here. So yeah, FIFO, the return of FIFO.
Yeah, return of FIFO. Yeah,
we'll catch you guys. We'll catch you guys Tuesday.
And if you haven't done it, please hit the like button and subscribe,
sir.
And one yes, more sir. Time, please invite someone to join you next Tuesday if you can.
Yes. And check out all the other shows on the network as well.
Man. Yes, sir.
Range per second. Of course, the flagship, Dead End Hip Hop, is the Mike. Everything. All the shows. Y'all know the damn shows. Follow all of them.
Yeah, I got to add that to my intro. We can catch you guys next Tuesday.
Peace. Yes, sir.
Hey, it's Bob Saget here. And guess what the name of my podcast is? Bob Saget's here for you. Everybody's got a podcast. We know that. I've been doing mine for a while, even before all this craziness of 2020 happened. And thank goodness we're coming out of it. And I'm continuing to do it forever because I love it. And it's something I love because I get to talk to comedians that I love and actors and writers and sports people and news people and call you guys sometimes and see how you guys are doing. It's available, of course, at Apple, and it's also available at Spotify, and so you want to subscribe and listen to it. In fact, pause the podcast you're listening to right now and listen to my podcast, Bob Saget's Here For You, and then go back to your podcast. So it was an extra hour, 90 minutes or whatever, so you could get a little extra entertainment out of your day. That's what I'm hoping for. All the best.